Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara,
and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
As is our custom here on All Marine Radio,
on
Friday we go to the bright side of the road, and the guy who always helps us get there is the All Marine Radio head chef, and that is Kim Holmes. So Kim joins us now. Kim, first of all, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mac. Good morning, Marines everywhere, and whoever else is listening to this beautiful program.
Exactly. Actually, we're recording this. We have to record this on Thursday. So, but I just sent Kim the pictures of my suite.
Yeah, that's right, folks. He's in a freaking suite at Caesar's Palace, 67 floors in the sky. Oh, my.
I totally don't belong here, but you know what? I'm having a good time with it because my daughters are absolutely pissed. What? We stayed with you in all the lousy places. Why didn't you tell us? I said, well, partly because I didn't know. They're like, how could you not know? Aren't you supposed to know? I'm like, whatever, girls. Don't hate, okay? Do not hate. So, have you ever stayed here at Caesar's Palace?
Yes, I have. In 1976, I was driving an old Opel I called the Red Hump, and I had a girlfriend. We were driving from Montana to the ranch in Victorville, California. And we spent a night in Caesars, and I drove up the big circle, and she says, "Where are you going?" I says, "Well, we're staying here tonight." And and I had called ahead and talked to the father of the guy I was going to visit, and he knew the manager of Caesars at the time in 76, you know, when the boys were still running the joint.
Right.
And boy, did I get set up nice. It was magnificent. And boy, did I get lucky many times that night. And she was a girl I had met skiing that spring in Switzerland.
Oh, okay.
And we kind of fell in love for a little bit. And she flew out on Swiss Air and stopped in Billings, Montana, of all places, and I picked her up there, and then we rested up, and then headed for Victorville, and went right through Vegas.
Wow, that's awesome.
But how long, and God knows how many times they've remodeled it and what they've added to the Caesars, but I'm sure it's just magnificent now.
Yeah, if you haven't been to Las Vegas in, I don't know, in a while, I mean, it's amazing. It's new. I mean, it at night it looks like Times Square-ish. It's Times Square-esque. They kind of streamlined the main drag, so there's traffic flows through it. But to get into the hotels and stuff, you tend to come in off the main drag, and they route traffic that way to keep, you know, congestion down. And, you know, at night there's just a ton of people. I was just here over the weekend for Patrick's birthday, which was awesome. We had a great time, ate a lot of great food, went to Patrick's fiancée, Sarah. She's a bit of a planner. And so plan she did. And we went to an incredible steakhouse on the north side of Las Vegas. And it was awesome. It was absolutely awesome. So very cool. And then we went to, brunch in Vegas is, I don't know, what would you call it? Legendary, Kim? I mean, they do brunch. You pay like 40.
Like nobody does brunch.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you want? We got it.
The
crab legs? We got it.
The, The brunch, the brunch was, I want to say the fee for the brunch was like $42.
Yeah, that's right. There, it's not cheap, but it's worth every penny.
Oh man, yeah. So they
really eat for a couple of days
just to get back to normal. They roll you out of there, out of those places. So I'm not that. I mean, I'm not a gambler, and so Vegas isn't really my thing. But I mean, I've come here for birthday balls. This is probably the, this is the third one. Patrick had his was it Patrick or John? No, John had a birthday ball up here, and I came up here, and then my unit had one up here I came to, and now this one. So, but this by far is the sweetest accommodations I've ever, it's, I'll put some pictures in this post, but of the suite that I'm staying in, and just to suffice it to say this, it is absolutely gorgeous. Absolutely, positively gorgeous. The bathroom, right, as you would expect when you're on the 67th floor, it is, it's got a TV in it, it's got the jacuzzi in it, it's got two different varieties of showers in it. It is absolutely, yeah, it is, they don't, I don't stay in hotels like this very often, if ever in my life. I don't, this might be the nicest hotel I've ever stayed in my life. This room might be the nicest one I've ever stayed in my life. So, so it's a pretty interesting. I walked in and started laughing, and then the guy who brought my bags up was Manuel. He is just he's a great dude. He the door opens. He's got my bag and my tuxedo and all my hanging clothes and he has this little block of wood. And he says, good afternoon, sir. How are you? I said, I'm fine. Manuel, how are you? He said, I'm good. And I opened the door, and he said, you don't need to hold it, and puts his block of the wood in the little corner of the door. I'm like, nice. And he starts to take my – I said, I could do that. He said, no, sir. He said, you're a guest here in Caesar's Palace. I will do this. Where would you like your clothes hung? In the closet? I said, yeah, that sounds like a good place for it. And I said, let me grab the suitcase. He says, no, sir, this is what I do. I said, all right. So, yeah, pretty, pretty, pretty interesting, but nice drive up here. It's about 72, on a early, late fall day here in Nevada, in Las Vegas. And, so it's been a fun day. Went down and, you know, the Marine Corps birthday ball, Kim, I like to call it the prom gone wrong. And you have all these beautiful, you know, like these young people in their great looking uniforms, right? And we have our dress uniforms, as Kim knows, cause he's seen my sons in them and me in them. They're off the hook beautiful. And then you have the, yeah, so they look great. And then they have their prom, their dates and the girl dates. I mean, they now buy the dress that they've always that they wanted to buy, but their mother wouldn't let them. Yeah,
yeah.
They get to buy that dress, so that's nice. And then, and so you have all the right elements for a gone wrong prom. And because inside those great looking uniforms, they're still Marines, right? Which means there's going to be some stuff that happens. And then it goes from there. But it's a pretty good time. You know, at the center of our birthday celebration is a ceremony where we cut the cake. We read a message, that was written by General Lejeune in 1919, I think. General Lejeune, as the family pronounces it. And we read it, we cut cake. There's a place setting for those Marines that are no longer with us that is, very prominent in the room. And the cake ceremony, the first piece of cake goes to the oldest. Actually, it goes to the guest of honor, which is me. So I get the first piece of cake, and then the guest of honor, not the guest of honor, then the oldest Marine gets the second piece of cake, and then the youngest Marine gets his third piece of cake. And and then, but again, so we were down. The Marines have been down there rehearsing this afternoon. And, you know, they march in their dress uniforms with swords, and then the color guard comes in with the American flag, the Marine Corps colors of the unit, and the rifle bearers, and they're down there practicing over and over and over because Our birthday is a huge deal. Not all the services celebrate their birthday like we do, but we love our birthday and we celebrate it like nobody. And the people that are in the program, you know, they rehearse the shit out of it, right? No, do it again. And it's a time-honored tradition. It's very cool. So, I'm just honored that somebody would think that I had, something important enough to share with these, young Marines and I said, look, I promise I won't be long-winded tonight. And they said, you take as long as you want. And I was like, whoa. I said, I'm not going to do that, but thank you very much. They said, no. And then I'm going to do my post-traumatic winning thing with them. I'm not sure what the dates are, but that coming up, so I think in the first week of January. So pretty excited about that. Pretty excited.
Honored Marine birthday. That is huge.
Right, yeah.
Freaking believable.
Yeah, 244 years. But like, you know, when I first joined, you know, you're like, and then you'd hear people talk about the birthday. Well, I'll tell you what, my first real experience was I was at Officer Candidate School, and they had the Marine Corps birthday ball. But we didn't participate because we weren't Marine. We were just candidates. So we didn't get to participate in any of it. And I think we had the ceremony. But again, we weren't real Marines yet, even though we were in Officer Candidate School. And so they had their ball and on Friday night, and my company commander, we saw him in his dressed blue uniforms. He was going to the ball from work. So he got dressed, right? He had on his medals and he had a bunch of them. And we were like, holy shit, man, look at that. And, like, man, it must be cool to be a Marine. So the next day we were supposed to go for a run, you know, on the birthday run. We were going on. And it, when you're at Officer Candidate School, you run fast. And so my captain, this is one of the things that like, how do you know that you're in a different organization? And I always point to this because I've never forgotten it. So we're running, okay? And we're coming to the end of, I don't know, a 3 or 4 mile run. We've been running through the hills, and now we're back on, you know, the parade deck, you know, the big asphalt area. We're running around that, and we're running around some of the barracks. And all of a sudden, he's in front of my platoon, and he's the first guy in the left column. And we're running behind him. We're singing and all that crap. And all of a sudden, he peels out of the formation, stops, bends over, and just pukes everywhere. And I mean, it wasn't a little bit of puke. It was a lot. It was a lot. It was a lot, and it was brown. So I'm not sure if he was drinking whiskey or what he was drinking the night before. But he's bent over, and he's puking everywhere. And we go running by him like, whoa, check. And we're all looking at like, whoa, look at that. Captain Rankin's puking. And so we keep going. Like 45 seconds later, here he comes with puke dripping down his chin. Where the fuck are you going without me? And I just remember thinking, oh my God, like when you puke, aren't you supposed to lay down and somebody gets you a washcloth and gets you some ginger ale and saltine crackers? Is it, right? Isn't that what's supposed to happen? Like nobody comes running back with puke dripping off their chin, wiping it, cussing at people and running again? What? That was one of my epiphanies, like, this ain't like the other things I've done in my life. This is different. You're expected to go through that and continue. And I was like, what the hell? Oh, it's still a funny memory. Still a funny memory after all these years. So anyway. Somebody sent me an email during the week, and they had heard we were talking about wild pheasant, and last week you were talking about pheasant, how do you say it?
Laurent.
Laurent?
Laurent.
Right, so.
Pheasant with orange sauce.
Right. And they said, Mac, next week, could you ask Kim what his favorite wild dish is? Is it pheasant? Is it dove? Does he have a soft spot in his heart for any of that? And I thought, you know what? I should ask him that because I don't know the answer to that. So,
my favorite wild game is elk. Pure and simple. Elk steak, medium rare to rare is absolutely deluxe. It's very lean. It's like, you know, buffalo is lean, so you can't overcook it, or you put it on your shoe, and because you can't chew it and swallow it. Elk, and out of elk, a friend gave me elk liver one time, and he just shot it, and he gave it, and he said, soak this in buttermilk for 24 hours, and then slice it up and fry it and have liver and onions and cook the liver medium rare. And I thought I'd died and gone to heaven. Those of you out there who like liver, and that was one of the best things I've ever done. And I've ever eaten. And I've expressed soaking game in milk or buttermilk to take the gaminess out and to tenderize it. And you can't go wrong doing that. Same with game birds. It's also, but you have to pat them dry. Rinse them and pat them dry before you season them and cook them. And game birds, because they are lean, you can also brine them with our sugar and salt combination, 50-50 sugar to salt. And water, and that's real good too. And that's got to be 24 hours.
I'm surprised. I'm a little bit surprised. What? So, let's talk about cooking. So, if it's not very lean, do you slow cook it? Do you cook it the same way? Do you sear it and go low heat really quick? I'm curious because it sounds like it's a little bit more delicate to cook.
We're talking elk?
Yeah, you were talking elk.
Yeah. Myself, like all steaks, you get that cast iron just glowing if you're doing it indoors or you're on a grill. It's as hot as you can. And room temperature, salt and pepper, and slap it on and cook it on one side. Get your marks anywhere, you know, we're saying maybe an inch and a half filet or a steak, rib steak or whatever, and then turn it over. And you want rare to medium rare inside, but you want the char on the outside. Okay. I like the cast iron skillet because it's a flat surface and all the juices stay in the meat because you're searing that meat.
Okay, so let me ask you this. What you just described is the same technique you use for every steak that I've ever heard you talk about. But then before that, you said, you know, it's not as lean, and so you got to be a little bit more careful with it.
Like a ribeye is not as lean as a elk ribeye. And so all steaks, you know, you have fat in a pan with a fattier cut of meat, but right, the lean cut, you want to sear those juices in. So the hotter the temperature, the faster it cooks. And, you know, you want that kind of char on the outside, right, and almost raw inside in the center, rare to medium rare, and that's where you get the best flavor.
So you're telling me that you're not going to cook it any different, but then what do you have to do? That's like you have to pay attention more. You can't like walk around like I do with your head up your ass.
you can't do that, Mac. You have to pay attention to your grilling. It's just paramount that you do that, because, you know, somebody who shot that elk and hauled it back in, you better treat it right and take good care of it and cook it properly.
Okay. All right. That's
otherwise, you can chew on her for a couple of days.
No, you know what? There's nothing worse than there's nothing worse. I went to F-18, man, my buddy Kurt. I've had a crazy week. I've been all over the place. But I was here Saturday night. And then Sunday was the actual Marine Corps birthday, November 10th, and Patrick's birthday. But we drove home during the day. And then my buddy, F-18 man, he flies for Delta now. He flew in to John Wayne, and he was spending the night and then flying out in the morning. He said, hey, I can't go home. It's too far. He lives about an hour away. And he said, you want to have dinner? I said, yeah, we'll see if we can get a reservation at Ruth Chris. So we went to, listen to this, listen to what we eat. So we go to Ruth Chris, and I'm a big fan of Ruth Chris. I love going to eat there. And so the waiter comes up. So we walk in, and we had a reservation at 8:15, but there was tables open in the bar. So, can we eat in the bar? And they're like, sure. So we sit down. We're watching the football game and at a nice table, a corner table. Actually, it was a booth. And so the guy comes up, and he starts telling us the specials. And he said, and I can't even remember what cut of meat it was. And he said, and it has a crab topping with a little bit of blue cheese, a little bit of garlic, and something else, and then it covered with two asparagus. And my friend and Rudy says, I'll have that. I said, I'll have what he's having. And so we had that with this, some more asparagus on the side, and then some garlic mashed potatoes. But Kim, steak with a little bit of crab, a little bit of cheese whipped in it. I don't know what it was, but along with a little bit of blue cheese of a crust and some asparagus and mashed potatoes. Are you kidding me?
Now, how hot do you think that oven that cooked your steak is?
Well, I mean, their food comes out screaming hot. I mean, they bring you the plate. And I mean, they always admonish you. They're like, hey, and the meat is still sizzling on the plate.
The temperature of that broiler is 1500 degrees.
Get out.
And yeah, it is. And for Hal's new steakhouse, that's what we're getting.
Oh my God.
Same kind
of, same system.
Yeah. It's go to Montague.
Oh, man, let me tell you, man, it's, I mean, the food, I love eating there. But now let me ask you this. They don't let the steak settle. So is it the different in the Montague oven? You don't use that? You know, explain how that works to me.
It's so seared in, the juices are.
Yes.
That all those high-end steak houses cook their steaks at that temperature. No matter if it's Ruth Chris or whatever it is. And they just bring it right to the table and it's still sizzling. And I guess the juices are in there. I haven't quite figured that one out yet, but we have a tasting demonstration tomorrow. Uh-huh. And I will ask that question.
How exciting. No, because I actually thought about that as we were getting ready to eat. I thought, I don't understand this because, you know, they pull that stuff out of there however they cook it, and I didn't know how the hell they cooked it. But, you know, it comes to the plate, and I'm like, it can't look like this unless they just pulled it out of the oven, you know. And so why don't they let it sit? And I thought, well, maybe they're cooking it different. So I'm a little bit curious. But let me just tell you, it was to die for. The other thing at Ruth Chris that I love is they make classic New York cheesecake, and it's got a thick, thick graham cracker crust to die for with strawberries and strawberry puree, I think it is. And, oh, my God. And it would easily feed two people. I get one for myself, and then I'd take the rest home. And the waiter says, would you care for dessert? I said, absolutely. And I said, I want the cheesecake. And he said, very well. He said, it's big. Would you like to share it? I said, not only no, but hell no. He can get his own. I'm taking mine with me. And the waiter started laughing. No, yeah, but it was delicious. And they have a number of things they'll do with the crust of the steak, you know, that you could order. You know, I think they have like a blue cheese crust, and they have a couple other variations of that, which I've always found kind of interesting. So some pretty cool stuff.
Sounds like you had something similar to a steak Oscar. What kind did they sauce it at all?
No. It was a crab concoction, and it was mostly lump crab, but there was some seasoning, and I think a little bit of cheese in there, something to bind it together as it sat on top of your steak. But wow.
Sounds great. I have to try that. Yeah. All right.
Yeah. No.
You're living high on the hog, baby.
Yeah. And none of it planned either. I didn't plan any of it. You know, Sarah picked a steakhouse. I wish I could remember the name of it, but I can't. And, you know, it's one of those really nice steakhouses where they bring these gigantic steaks to the table and say, "What would you care for, sir?" Like, what are these? Like, is Fred Flintstone in the back cutting these brontosaurus steaks or what? And so, no, it was a beautiful, and it was a beautiful joint too. And Ruth Chris is always, you know, always nice. You know, you see people there in jeans, you know, kind of like Kim's place was a place where you could go. Kim had these, had just incredible art there, and the wood was beautiful, and the brass of the bar, and it was just but you could go in jeans and feel comfortable there, but you could also, you know, you could go dressed to the nines and feel comfortable there. So these places are like that. It's kind of interesting that you don't feel out of place in those places. Is that kind of an art, you know? Is that kind of an art to do?
That's a great joint. And people used to call me up and say, "Do you have a dress code?" And I said, "Oh, hell yes, a very serious dress code." "Oh, jeez, what is it?" "You have to wear clothes." And that was it. I mean, what are you comfortable having dinner in? I want you to be comfortable, relax, enjoy yourself. And that's all. I mean, the days of, unless you're some stuffy club somewhere that make you wear a coat and tie. Otherwise, a Hawaiian shirt, I've had T-shirts come in, you know, tuxedos, suits, everything, you know, prom dresses, the whole enchilada. It doesn't matter. It's whatever the occasion is, what you're comfortable in. The emphasis, from my point of view, and from every good joint, is the food and the service and the atmosphere. And you have to have those three components to have a great joint. Otherwise, you know, you just might as well buy a chain and count beans. I don't mean that to be snooty or anything. I mean, that's my competitive edge as a restaurateur is me. And I have to make it as comfortable as possible for the guest.
Right.
And that's what you try to do in a good place.
Well, no, I mean, to me, there's an art. There's certainly an art to it. And the art is, you know, how do you make, it's almost like, you know, Disney, the art form of the Disney movie that has adult content sewn into a kid's movie so that parents will always want to go because they know they're going to be entertained. And that is an art form. And what you're talking about, you know, is its own art form as well, to craft a place that's optically pleasing and that, you know, you feel comfortable, you know, but you don't feel alienated, right? You don't feel alienated. I think a lot of wood to me does that. And, there's to me, remember those old restaurants that would have the red velvet, you know, right? And the big chandelier in the center of the room. And, you know, there was the white linens and you see white linen in most restaurants, but I think wood has a way of making a place very, very warm and not intimidating, high-end intimidating. I don't know if that makes sense, because your place had a lot of wood, and it was absolutely beautiful.
Thank you.
No.
Thank you very much, Mac.
And it had a lot of art. It had a lot of art in it. And I'll tell you a funny art story. Catherine loved these glass clowns Kim had, right?
Yeah.
And so Kim was...
clowns.
Kim was, when Kim was selling his restaurant, right? And Colleen and I were up there. And he was kind of getting, he knew, you know, he was going to do it. And so he asked Colleen, he said, Colleen, is there anything in here that you want? Now, just so you know, Colleen is Kim's goddaughter. And Colleen looks, and she sees the clown that Catherine loves, right? And she says, that clown. And so Colleen goes home with Catherine's clown, right?
Oh.
Could not wait to get in the house with Catherine's clown. So we get home, and Colleen grabs the clown. She goes running, and she goes, look what Kim gave me, right? And Catherine's like, whoa! Catherine's head explodes. She's like, that belongs to me, right? And so, but I brought that to Kim's attention, and you had more than one glass clown. So Kim sent a second one, and Colleen said, no, this is for you. There's another one for me. And Catherine's blood pressure recovered, right? Her eyeballs went back into her eye sockets, and she continued on with her life, but she about snapped when that happened. What's that?
She still have the clown?
Oh, hell yeah.
Good.
Yeah. I mean, Kim collected art.
I wanted both of your daughters to have a clown.
Oh, well, Colleen didn't really care if Catherine had one. She was getting one. But Kim, I mean, collected, I mean, there was bronze pieces in there. There was all kinds of, you know, various art in Kim's little art colony of a restaurant.
Mm-hmm. And stuff I'd collected over the last 30 years.
Did you have a favorite piece in all of that art that you kept?
Yeah, I do. It's done by Walter Peel, and it was done on an old school map. An old world map that from school that came down from over the chalkboard, and it's called Cowgirls of the Rodeo. And it's painted. He's kind of an abstract artist, but you could tell that there's cowgirls roping and riding, bucking horses. And it's great. And it's in our living room over our couch. You've seen it many times. And then a couple of other pieces I really like that I kept. Yeah, we our house is full of art,
right.
and soapstones and
you know the piece, yeah. You know there's two things that would always catch my eye in your place, and I don't know the origin of them. One is the big propeller that you had in there. Why that, and what was the significance of it?
Okay, let's see. Love this story. The propeller is from a Navy training plane, a biplane out of Lakehurst, New Jersey.
Right.
And I was living in Port Townsend, Washington before I moved back here. And it was sitting by the door. And I had made a bet. And the guy who owned the propeller owned the house. And he's just aching. I says, well, what are you doing with that propeller? I was going to throw it out. I says, well, why don't you throw that in the kitty? And that'll cover your bet then. It was like he owed 80, 90 bucks into the pot. And he says, okay. So I won it in the card game.
That's a good story, man. That's like Titanic.
Yeah, and I've
except he died.
Yeah, well, I'm still here. That might be this fall, but I'm still here.
Poor Leonardo. Yeah, poor Leonardo DiCaprio.
Propeller in the car game, and I just, God, it weighs 60, 70 pounds, and I've been lugging it around ever since. I have it in a friend's clothing store now. And yeah. But it fit above the bar perfectly, and when we, after the flood, we built the new restaurant, I built the bar around that propeller. That's a fact.
That's awesome. All right, the other piece is, on the bar, there was a brass rail, and it had elephant heads in it. It was really cool. What's the story? Where did you find that?
Well, I was doing the bar, and I wanted a brass rail on top of the bar. Not on top, but in front, at the top of the bar, so people could hold on to it. And my mother was a staunch Republican. And I was looking through some magazines about brass fixtures. And I saw these elephants in the brass rail. And I says, oh, Jesus, these, I couldn't have those. And so I got them and put them in there. It helped me sell the restaurant. It's called Ellie's Ivy for elephant.
Right.
The bar and the ivy that's on the side of the building. Yeah.
How cool.
Yeah, so they double dividend.
No, but he had his own little art gallery in his place. But it was all cool art. It wasn't like standoffish art or anything like that. It was like, I mean, Kim's restaurant is very much a reflection of he and his wife Beth, and they're normal, fun, you know, people. And the restaurant was very much a reflection. The way you got treated was a reflection of that. Kim would come out, and he would talk to everybody. And that was like, that was one of the highlights of the night for everybody, when the big man comes out and he spends a few minutes with work in the room. And now for us, it was always cool. Kim would come out and we'd try to time it so that, you know, we knew he would be doing his thing, and then he would be able to, then when he finished up, he'd be able to kind of come hang out at our table and have dinner and shoot the shit with us. So have a Heineken back in the day.
Yeah.
And
that was a joy when you brought the whole family in,
right.
And there are times when you and I have dinner in the office.
Yeah, but Wednesday.
The theme of my restaurant was my art. I loved color, you know, bright, beautiful colors and how they're applied to a canvas, or whether it's watercolor or oil. That's who we were, who we are still.
Yeah. No, it was cool. My kids loved it. We got to where we would sit in the back corner of the restaurant, right near the kitchen. And Kim would come and pull up a chair and or stool or whatever. And we would hang out. And then our oldest son, John, he'd be working. So we'd get a chance to say hi to Johnny a little bit. And my family loved the food, right? Catherine is a born and bred North Dakota girl. She's a steak and potatoes, but she loved ribs.
Yeah.
Catherine loved Kim's ribs, and then the rest of us would all kind of move around. I had my own little dish that he allowed me to put together, and it was about a half a ribeye. It was a ribeye and scampi. And
now it's about a pound of meat.
and then a crab cake. And a little garlic mashed potato, and there'd be a little avocado slice on there, And that was my go-to. But I also loved the walleye that he did. I mean, it just tasted really light and delicious. But my family, I mean, that was home. In fact, we had John's rehearsal dinner down there, and it was awesome because it was, in Kim's joint with Kim and Beth hosting it. It was very cool, very cool.
Oh man, and now you're even talking to the lowly Kimmy from the top of Caesar's Palace.
Yeah,
that is so. Cool.
Let me just tell you something happened to me today. I was checking in to Caesar's Palace. There's two Marines in front of me, and we're standing there in line, and they were like, "Are you here for the weekend?" I said, "Well, actually, I think I'm speaking at your birthday ball." And they looked at me and they're like, "Really?" And then one of them looks at me and says, "You're Mac?" And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "We're really excited to hear you." And I started laughing. I'm like, "Come on, man. Nobody's excited to hear the guest speaker." And they said, "No, we've heard like really cool stuff about you." And I was like,
"I mean, how did that make you feel, Mac?" Seriously.
No, I mean, let me tell you, I have to pinch myself on there's some days of my life that I honestly have to pinch myself because the goodness that has come out of post-traumatic winning and honestly takes my breath away sometimes. I mean, nobody wants to. I was even talking to the commanding officer and the sergeant major, and I said, "Look, just so you know, I'm going to be short. I'm not going to talk long. I'm going to show a little video I made, and I'm going to be in and out." And they looked at me like, "Take as much time as you want." And I said, "No. Look, do you remember anything anybody's ever said at a birthday ball?" And they both started laughing. They're like, "No." I said, "Exactly. I don't either." I said, "I'm gonna try to be the first one though. Right? Trust me. I'm gonna try to tattoo their heart, but it's gonna be brief." And they're like, "Hey, look, you're pretty good at this, so we'll trust you." And then I think right after the first of the year, we'll do post-traumatic winning for everybody. So that's exciting. And then I had another, a woman who they're called, I don't know what they're called now. They used to be called family readiness officers. There was a day in the Marine Corps when the wives used to do all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That whole system started after Vietnam. And we had never really been in a major war since then, right? So that, the casualty notifications, guys losing parts of their bodies and all this stuff, that system had never really been tested. Well, it got tested. And it was too much, right? In addition to your husband being over there, you're involved with every casualty notification, that people are in burn units and families, how do we pay for this? And so the Marine Corps evolved to hiring professionals to help with this stuff. And so she walked up to me and she said, "You're Mac?" And I said, "I am." And she introduced herself and she said, "I'm so excited to hear you. I've heard so much about you." And I'm like, "Holy shit, man. I need to come here more often because they love me. They love me." And that was even before I went to my room. She said, is your room okay?" And I said, "I haven't been there." She said, "Okay, if it's not okay, let me know." I'm like, "Yeah, you're probably not going to hear from me a lot." But it was, like you said, I mean, it's very cool. It's very cool. And the other thing Kim's helping me plan is trying to get post-traumatic winning up in what I call my adopted hometown of Grand Forks. And so Kim's helping me work that and hopefully that'll happen in January. So I got in touch with some people and they're very, very interested and excited and we'll see if we can make that happen. So pretty exciting stuff. But again, that's going to be my message tonight to Marines is do what you're passionate about. And Kim and I are both examples of that. And Kim's passion was his joint and cooking and having a place where people could come create memories in their life. And I have a bunch of memories, of Kim's restaurant, and sometimes I brought people that had experienced incredible loss in their life down there and we had dinner. and I'd introduce him to Kim, and I'd be doing something with them, and sometimes they were family events, and so I think we told our kids that Colleen was on the way down there, and so at the round table next to the bar. So hopefully we'll do some more of that. But that's my message. That's my message is you can only be great at that which you are passionate about. And you had a great joint, Kim, because you loved that. I mean, all of it. You loved every bit of it, from the way your joint looked to the way the food came out and to the pool room and all of it. I mean, it was your thing. And the only reason post-traumatic winning has evolved to become something is my passion for the culture of the Marine Corps and also my interest in how do you live a great life with trauma. And I was doing it as a consumer. And what I've learned, though, is what Wayne Gretzky talks about him becoming a hockey player. He said, I've never worked a day in my life. Every day, I mean, this is my love. This is my passion in life, and I've been fortunate enough to do that. And so that's my message is look, if your passion is to be a Marine, then every day bring it. Come and give of yourself as much as you can and watch what happens to your career. If you're here for 4 years or 5 years or 10 years and then get out, find what you love and go do that, because greatness can only come with the time commitment that you make when you're passionate about something. And so do that. So there you have it. What do you think? Good message? Bad message?
It's a fabulous message, because I am getting to Hal asked me to consult on his new steakhouse. So I'm getting to do my passion again. And I just came from a meeting before we started talking. And it's looking great. I'm going for a tasting tomorrow in Fargo on the new oven. I'm very excited. And I know that I'll give Hal all my best.
Let me ask you this. How much fun are you having doing it? And did you realize that you missed it that much?
I didn't realize at the start I missed it very much. But I missed it a lot. And I'm having as much fun as if it was my joint.
Right.
But without the money. And Hal is loving the fact that I am involved and as committed as I am, because it is a joy to be doing something like this. It makes it all worthwhile,
right.
You know?
Well,
you know,
if it's your passion, right, if it's your passion to be able to be involved in a project like that, it's nothing but fun, right? Nothing but fun.
Yes, it is. This is tremendous. I'm very excited to be able to do this. That's for sure.
Yeah. 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 In fact, the song you hear, Kim, you've heard Kim refer to Hal. The song, Bright Side of the Road, I heard that when it was, on the radio. But Kim and I would talk about it. And he was telling me what a cool song it was. And he said, I heard it the other night at Hal was inducted. And I might have been at that. He was given the Sue Award, which was, I don't know if they still give it out, but it was for an alumni that had done incredible things in the community, which he has. And he and his wife have been a huge part of the community in Grand Forks. And his dad, Hal's dad was, and Hal, Keds come home and, came home and assumed that mantle and had been phenomenal. And that was his walk-up music, was Van Morrison's Bright Side of the Road. So when you hear it, we stole that from him. But I love the song because, to me, it's so emblematic of Kim, right? If you're having a shitty day, you come around the corner and you see Uncle Mountain, and he always make you, Kim would always make you smile. And so that's what I love. When I associate the song more with Kim than I do with Hal. And so I say that with apologies to Hal, but I use it as Kim's walk-up. But that's where we got it. And so that's pretty cool.
Oh, I told him that. I told him that's our intro.
That's awesome. The I had one more food question for you, and I was talking about cheesecake earlier, and so the question was, are there secrets to making great cheesecake? So are there secrets to make? And I'm sure there are. Do you have any that you could share with us?
My wife, she is this cheesecake guru.
Oh, wait a minute. I'll tell you what. If you Google what, key lime pie?
Yeah.
That's a cheesecake, yes? Or no?
Well, kinda.
Kinda?
Kinda. It's not really. Oh. The cheesecake should be cooked at a certain temperature in a bath, a water bath, and then the temperature is turned down a couple of times, lowered, the temperature is lowered, because it keeps it from cracking on the top, so it settles right. And a good cheesecake has to be in the refrigerator for 24 hours before it can be eaten. You just can't pull it out of the oven and eat it, because it'll kind of fall apart. And that's about it for me. But if you want a cheesecake seminar, you should have Beth on. We'll get Beth on for a while.
Okay, we'll do that. Why don't we do that next week? We'll tell Beth that she's got to join us for the first time ever, and we're going to have a little cheesecake seminar.
Yeah, she's a pro.
All right.
And she started out baking cheesecakes, folks. Above the original Sanders, we lived above the restaurant, and we had a little 1930-something oven, and she started one cheesecake at a time. And today, when she bakes cheesecake, she bakes them 4 to 6 at a time. So she's, for the restaurant, she baked them 6 at a time.
Wow.
And, wow. And she rotates them in the oven. There's a lot of procedure with her cheesecakes, but as you know, they always came out perfect.
Oh, man. No, she's legendary. All right. Well, that'll be cool. We'll have fun then. We'll have fun.
Yeah.
All right.
Try to enlist her next Friday at 11.
Yeah.
I can pull this off.
We'll see. We'll see. We'll see if you have any game.
Yeah, that's the right thing to say. We'll see if I have any game with her.
Exactly. That's a 50-50 shot at best. Anyway. All right, Kim. First of all, thank you for doing this. And as always, an awesome time. And have a great weekend and have a great time tomorrow. Doing your thing, and make sure, write yourself a note. Make sure you ask them about, hey, look, you know, in my joint, you know, we used to sear our steaks, and then we'd always, you know, the rule is they sit for 10 minutes. You don't do that. How do you account for, you know, how do you account for that? I'd be curious to know that.
So would I. Believe me, I'm going to ask that question.
All right. There you have it.
All right, man.
All right. Thank you, Kim.
Good luck. Have a great time.
I will.
Thank you very much, man.
All right. There you have
God bless.
It. There you have it. The one and only P. Kimball Holmes here on a Friday edition of All Marine Radio that got recorded the day before. But don't hold that against me. That's him going out the door. All right, so. That'll do it on this Friday. If you're just tuning in, hour one, you'll hear about my, You'll hear about my room here. So don't touch that dial. Pretty cool event in Las Vegas with Marine Wing Support Squadron 372. And I can't say thank you enough for the hospitality that they've shown us. It's very cool. You know, I Sergeant Major of the squadron, his name is Tim Riggs. He showed up and showed up at my house to invite me to come be the guest speaker here. And then their squadron commander, Lieutenant Colonel Scott Bettinghoff. He's just a good dude, and they came to see post-traumatic winning when I did it for 2nd Battalion, 5th Marines in San Clemente. And so I'll go do it for them pretty soon. So it's very cool. It's just a cool experience, and they've kind of rolled out the red carpet for me, and it's awesome. And so had a great night with them last night, so you're going to hear about that, in addition to my cool room. But really excited. So on this Friday, go and change somebody's life. I texted somebody today, and they were asking me about, you know, how's everything going? You had a busy week. And I said, you know what? Honestly, I'm living a dream. And that's what it feels like. It feels like that I have to pinch myself. And I don't, you know, again, the more good I think you put out there in some way, shape, or form, I know the cosmic energy thing is bullshit, but it doesn't seem like it is in my life anyway. The more people I help, the more good I try to do, it seems like the more it simply comes back to me in my own life. And so, I mean, that is what it is, and I do feel like I'm living a dream. Anyway, but it comes with touching people's lives. Not be afraid to tell them the truth, not being able to help them, not being able to go there, and changing their lives. So, with that said, don't touch that dial. Have a great weekend. On Monday, we'll be broadcasting from Yuma, Arizona. That's right. Heading over to help do post-traumatic winning 4 times in 1 day. A world record for, it's MAG 13. So, fired up about that. It'll be good. So, and then I have a little bit of a break. But I'm going to write 2 books before the end of the year. That's the mission. If Viktor Frankl can write Man's Search for Meaning in 9 days, I can write Post-Traumatic Winning in 8. And that's my goal. Pump it out in eight days. And go from there. Anyway, on this Friday, halfway through November, have a great weekend. Change somebody's life. Give of yourself and watch what happens. On a Friday, All Marine Radio is over and out.